Hello, this is Chris English with my February edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that we hope will provide you with a look at our world, both in and around the city of Brighton and Hove and further afield, all for both our older listeners and those not so old. In this programme, we'll be hearing from one of the stars of the musical Ghost that'll be playing at the Theatre Royal next week, or this week if you're listening to the repeat. I'll also be talking to the man that's responsible for the building of the new Royal Sussex County Hospital, which is fast taking shape under those massive cranes that tower over Kemp Town. We'll also be bringing you news of a new initiative that aims to help older and vulnerable people avoid standing on public transport. And finally, there'll be information and a sneak preview of the latest production from Brighton Theatre Group that promises to rock your socks off with all that jazz. So that's all to come in this edition of At Home This Morning, our magazine programme that's made for Brighton's only truly local radio station, Radio Reverb by Grey Masters Productions, and broadcast on 97.2 FM, DAB Digital Radio, and online at radioreverb.com. But to get things moving, let's hear from the leading lady of the musical Ghost that will be, or already is if you're listening to the repeat, playing at the Theatre Royal next week. So let's extend a Brighton welcome to Rebecca Lowings, who plays Molly, who joins us now on the telephone. Firstly, Rebecca, can you give anyone who's never seen the show or the film it's based on a quick synopsis of what it's all about?
So if you haven't seen the film, it's about, it follows the story of Molly Jensen and her other half, Sam Wheat, as they move into a new apartment in New York. And on the way home, he is tragically killed. I won't tell you how. And it's about how she deals with the loss and the grief of losing Sam. But it's also about Sam being stuck in sort of a parallel universe. He's still there, but he can't get through to Molly. So he goes through Oda Mae Brown, who's a psychic reader and advisor, and tries to find a way to get to talk to Molly and to, you know, finish his business there on Earth before he can actually leave and say goodbye.
Wow. So that sounds a bit depressing, but I'm sure it isn't.
I mean, it definitely explores all types of emotions. The happiness when he's alive, the sadness obviously when he dies. Oda Mae Brown brings a beautiful sort of lift to the show. She's really comedic. And we have the wonderful Jackie DuBois, that's just our call to the stage. she plays Oda Mae Brown with such wit and such character that she brings such a likeness and such, she just kind of lifts the weight of the sadness. It's great.
So it bring tissues is a message, or has it got its happy moments as well?
It's definitely got its happy moments. It's definitely got its funny moments. Definitely pack your tissues. It's definitely needed.
Now, Demi Moore, of course, played Molly in the film. So
she did indeed.
Is that a hard act to follow?
Oh, well, absolutely. She's a beautiful actress and one that I admire to be and inspire to be when I was growing up and, you know, deciding what I wanted to do in this life, decided to be an actress. And watching the film, she's just everything that you want to be in a woman. She's happy. She's kind of carefree. It was wonderful to follow her story again later on. I've rewatched the film, obviously, when I got the part, and I think I bring a lot of Demi Moore back into the musical, yeah.
Well, we look forward to seeing that. And how mentally hard do you find the whole show business thing and performing?
Well, it has its ups and its downs. I think like any job, you go to work, you do your job, you come home. But for me, I mean, it's really hard to explain, actually. You have your ups, you have your downs, but the ups so outweigh the downs as well. When you're in work, it's absolutely fantastic, especially with this job, because our cast and crew are just fantastic. So whilst I'm having to play an incredibly sad character for most of my journey, they're there side of stage to make sure that I'm up, happy, and, you know, easy to step off stage and step out of the character.
What about a message for young people? I mean, in this programme, we'll be talking to a local theatre group that are performing in Chicago. Now, this is the youth group, up to 16. So what's your message to young people like that?
My message would be to never stop working. Even when you get a job, you never stop trying to be better. Always go to lessons. Go to class every day. Go to class. Have singing lessons every week. Have dancing lessons every week. And don't forget, the acting is more impressive than big belty notes, is what I would say. But I would also say to surround yourself with the most supportive human beings that you can find, people that will help you through the tough times, because in this industry, there are a lot of tough times. There's lots of knockbacks. There's lots of, you know, competition. And if you surround yourself with the right people, then it's much better. It's much easier.
Now, you've played Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar. So,
yes.
I mean, an entirely different role. Again, a slightly tragic role, but a different role. So do you like a particular role? Have you got a dream role?
I mean, I'd love to be painted green at some point to be Elphaba in Wicked. But as dreams kind of go, it's no longer roles for me. It's actually experiences. When I was younger, I used to say, oh, do you know what? I'd love to play that role. But now it's just to travel with my work. That's my dream. And that's what I'm doing. I get to tour the UK. I was lucky enough last year to go to Dubai, Istanbul, Italy. It's been incredible. And I think those experiences are worth more to me than any one role that I will ever get.
Now, going back to Go, have you got a favourite number in the show?
Yes, I do have a favourite number, but it's not mine.
Oh, right.
No, my favourite number for me that I sing is Nothing Stops Another Day, because it's a moment in Act Two where Molly is getting, kind of working her way through the grief into a new transition of life and realising that life has to move on. But my favourite song in the show is actually I'm a Believer. No, is it I'm a Believer? Believer. It's just called Believer, isn't it? Yeah. it's just Believer. It's one that Jackie sings and the sisters. And it's just so much fun. I sit there and sing it backstage every day.
When you're backstage, are you still in the role? Or is that only when you're actually out there under the lights?
Well, I try my best to leave the role on stage, because she goes through such a range of emotions. It's really easy to bring them off stage with you. So what I try to do is, as soon as I walk off stage, I'm me again as a person. And then just before I go back on stage, I become Molly again. Yeah.
And a final message to the audience, or the potential audience out there. Why should they come and see Ghost?
You should come and see Ghost because it's one of the most universal, relatable sort of musicals out there. It's not your jazz handsy sort of flamboyant musical, although they're absolutely fantastic and I absolutely love them and have been in many of them. It's more of an extension of a play. So if you're new to musical theatre, it's great for you because it doesn't feel like a musical. If you're a fan of musical theatre, then you'll still be a fan because there are those jazzy numbers intertwined in there. But mainly, if you want to feel included and feel like you can relate to the actors on stage and really feel with us all of the range of emotions, then definitely come along.
Rebecca, thanks very much for joining us, and break a leg, as they say.
Thank you so much. Have a lovely night.
The musical Ghost is on at the Theatre Royal, where I'm not surprised there will be not a dry hour in the house. Now let's turn our eyes skywards to those massive cranes that are currently towering over the old Royal Sussex County Hospital as scores of workers strive to build our new hospital, a project that's been a long time coming, but boy is it now flying up. To find out more, I went along to the site and first asked Richard Beard from what's called the Three T's Project if work was on schedule.
Well, it certainly is. We're looking at a project here that's been done in three stages over 9 years and is going to cost £485 million all told. We're working on stage one, which is the largest of the two new hospital buildings that are going on the front of the site. It's going to be complete right at the very end of 2020, and it's going to open its doors early in 2021 because, of course, we have to move some services over. That's why it takes a little bit of time to do that. And that's pretty much the time that we've been telling people for the last few years it's going to open. So that's going well. As far as the helideck's concerned, we'll look for trial landings on there around April, May time. So that's with the air ambulance doing trial landings.
That's this year?
That's this year, 2019. And then it would come into operation early summer, so probably late in June, I would think, this year.
And how much difference will that make to the input of patients to A&E?
Well, in terms of the patients, the care that patients get, at the moment, if the air ambulance needs to bring somebody to the Royal Sussex County, it has to land in East Brighton Park, and then the patient has to be transferred by road ambulance. With the new helideck, we'll be able to bring patients directly to the roof of the Thomas Kemp Tower, the tallest building in the hospital, bring them down via a dedicated lift straight into A&D, into the emergency department. What that will mean in terms of emergency department capacity, there's probably about 30 to 40 patients a year who might be taken elsewhere in the helicopter because of that lengthy transfer from East Brighton Park that we'd see coming to the Royal Sussex instead.
And what sort of departments are going into the new buildings that we see being erected at the moment?
Mainly, these are departments that already exist within the hospital. We're not really creating anything new in terms of new services or new treatments. What we are doing is we're taking wards and departments from some of the oldest buildings in the NHS and moving them into the sorts of 21st century accommodation they should be in. So you're going to see everything from elderly care and general medicine wards through to neurosurgery, critical care, a whole range of services.
Now, the NHS is constantly under the microscope and under the eyes of the media. Are things getting better?
That's a very big question. There are, I think it comes to surprise to nobody to say that there are issues at the moment with the fact that we're getting high demand in A&E departments across the entire country, and that's proving quite challenging at times. Some of that is to do with the fact that the facilities don't exist out in the community for people who are medically well enough to leave hospital but need social care. Those facilities don't exist for people. But on the other hand, you continue to have a dedicated body of people who go all out to deliver the best possible care to patients. And with projects like that we've got going on here with the 3T's redevelopment at Royal Sussex County Hospital, we'll be able to put patients into the sorts of accommodation that they should be treated in, and that will actually, you know, it raises staff morale to be working in such nice surroundings.
You talked about the oldest buildings in the NHS. I mean, is that true?
As far as we're aware, yes. Nobody's come to challenge the claim that we've got the oldest acute ward block. So acute means for inpatients who require medical care. That's the Berry Building, where the main entrance to the hospital currently is. It opened its doors in 1828, which was 20 years before Florence Nightingale started nursing. And when it opened its doors, it was the Sussex Hospital and Sea Bathing Infirmary. And we're back in the day where it was considered, ah, yes, I see, you have a pneumonia, let's plunge you into some cold seawater, that will do you the world of good. Thankfully, that very quickly went out of fashion. But, yeah, that's the sort of timeline we're talking about.
Now, there are some old bits of the building. I mean, the front of the county must have appeared in a million photographs or video clips over the time. Will any of that be preserved?
Because the building is of the age it is, it doesn't lend itself to modern hospital layouts at all. So we're not in a position where we can preserve the front of the building, which was one of the... We did look at it. It's one of the things we looked at, because we're aware of the fact that people have a strong sense of place when they see that building. What we will be preserving is the interior of the chapel, which is within that Barry building. We'll be, say, preserving. It's going to have to move, so it'll be a facsimile of it created in the new building that opens its doors December 2020. But yes, unfortunately, there was no way we could create the space and provide the sort of accommodation we need to for patients and staff and visitors whilst keeping hold of that front of that Barry building.
How important is it to have all the services in one site?
It's incredibly important. When you come to look at the care of an individual, every patient follows an individual path. Now, in certain cases, let's take something that's fairly straightforward, like an appendectomy, taking out an appendix. We know fairly well what's going to happen there. We know that somebody's going to come in, they'll have the operation, they'll be in hospital for a day or two, probably, maybe slightly longer, and then they'll be well enough to go home. But then if you have a patient that has a lot of conditions, a lot of what's known as comorbidities, they might end up having to be seen or travel through a number of departments within the hospital. Having them close to each other, having the departments close to each other, is very important in terms of the patient experience and journey. Moreover, when you're looking at designing a hospital, one of the things you want is you want to have the departments that see the most patients coming through A&D, so departments that might be like elderly care, general medicine, digestive diseases, the vascular service wards, things like that. You want them close to the A&D department. And that's one of the things that the rebuild is going to do, is doing for us, is it's allowing us to bring those services that see most patients coming from A&D and being admitted much closer to the emergency department itself.
Is there a problem that we're all living too long?
I wouldn't say that's a problem. That would be a soundbite, wouldn't it? Now, no, I don't think that's a problem. I think that what that does is it changes the face of what healthcare needs, how healthcare needs to be planned, and what we need to think about in terms of healthcare. But no, I wouldn't say it's a problem. It's actually, and I say this about, for instance, cancer services, where we're going to be doubling the number of beds and the number of treatment spaces for patients with cancer. It's actually a real positive, because what it tells us is we're diagnosing more cases of cancer earlier, we're able to treat them more, and patients are surviving longer or recovering completely from more cancers than was the case in the past, which has got to be a good thing.
So is this all money well spent?
I'm not going to say no. Genuinely, yes. Yes, it really is. When you look at the facilities, if you go into the Barry building now and you look at the ward facilities in the Barry building, as I say, we've done what we can in there, but it did open its doors in 1828. You look at the conditions that patients are being treated in, and then you look at what we're going to be able to offer, and the project basically speaks for itself. This is going to take us from the 19th century in the Barry building to the 21st century in just 9 years of construction, which is no mean feat.
Richard, thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Thank you for your time.
I was talking there to Richard Beard about the building of the new Royal Sussex County Hospital. Now, while at first glance it might seem that poor public transport etiquette and hospitals are unconnected, that's not quite the case, as research for the Anchor Hanover organisation, which provides care and housing for older people both in Brighton and elsewhere, shows that it's those that are less able, either because of age or vulnerability, to find a seat on public transport, where often the so-called priority seats are occupied by those who are either too busy on their phone or tablet, or just downright selfish. To find out more, I'm pleased to welcome on the telephone Anchor Hanover campaign manager Daria Phillips to the programme. Firstly, Daria, is the situation really so bad that those who are most at risk are the very people who are affected?
Unfortunately, it's not a figment of anyone's imagination. So So Anke Hanover has done some research, and we found that the way people behave on public transport is really fueling a loneliness epidemic among older people. People are not generally giving up their seats because they're too busy looking down at their phone or their tablet and just not looking around and not engaging in eye contact as much as they used to. And I'm sure, like many of your listeners will understand, that, you know, public transport is a really important way for people to get about, socialise, leisure activities, etc. And not being able to get a seat is really affecting people.
What can be done about it? I mean, should older people sort of stand up for their rights and say, oh, that's a seat for me?
I think it's okay if you need a seat and you would like a seat, you can ask. And the same way we're asking for people as part of the Standing Up for Sitting Down campaign, is we're asking people to look up, be a bit more aware of the people around them, and offer a seat to anyone who may need it. If you don't need it, that's fine. But really, we just want people to be kinder to one another and just be more aware.
And is there a way in which people can find out more about the campaign on a website or anything like that?
Yes. So the Anke Hanover website, Standing Up for Sitting Down, has its own page, and you can get some more information there. We want people to raise awareness. You can use social media to tweet your awareness or download a letter, which you can send to your transport provider to put pressure on them to really raise a bit more awareness of this issue for older people.
Is it a problem that's more endemic on the railways rather than buses?
Our research has shown that it kind of varies, actually, and across the country. I think it's a general behavioural pattern that's happening all over the country. And I think for us, what's really poignant is that one in five older people worry so much about the lack of seating that it's made them less likely to use public transport. And it's leaving people feeling isolated and or feeling invisible, like other people don't care. And that's what we want to kind of, that's why we're here, to raise awareness about the issue.
And do you think it's a problem where older people, I hesitate to use the word manners, but is it indicative of the way that younger people sometimes these days don't seem to care about anybody else but themselves?
Anke Hanover research does show that older people are actually more likely to give up their seat than younger people. So that does show that there is a bit of an age gap. There is a difference in behaviour there. But we do find that one of the reasons people don't want to offer their seat is because that they don't want to offend anyone as well. So there is it's kind of like a balance, isn't there? So some people say that they don't notice that somebody needs a seat. Some people don't want to offer because they don't want to offend people. I think we want to just get people talking about it and encourage people to look up and just have that conversation.
You talk about older people, but it's vulnerable people as well, this campaign's aimed at, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's for anyone who needs it. There are people who have disabilities, not always visible disabilities, and people who are pregnant or with young children that may also really benefit from having just somewhere to sit down and have a bit of a rest. You know, there are some transport providers that give you badges that you can wear, but not everybody wants to wear a badge. So I think it's about common courtesy and looking up and just checking to see if other people around you are in need of a seat.
And what are Anke Hanover? How do you fit into the transport situation?
So we are England's largest not-for-profit provider of housing and care for older people. So we have over 60,000 older people that live with us across the country, and we are so aware and in tune with what issues older people are facing that we want to champion their rights. And this is an issue that's been brought to us by our customers, and that's why we want to raise more awareness as an organisation and really sort of encourage people to back the campaign and transport providers to back the campaign. And we've spoken to lots of retailers about getting more high street shops to also provide more seating so that older people can access the high street. This is a campaign that's run for over 3 years, and we're really trying to just raise awareness of this issue that's affecting the happiness of older people.
And the campaign is called?
Standing Up for Sitting Down.
Sounds simple. And the website that they can find out more details?
Is standingupforsittingdown.org.uk. Standing Up for Sitting Down will take you to the Anke Hanover website.
And is there a way that people can communicate to you how they feel?
Yes, they can drop us an email, communications@anchor.org.uk.
Daria, thank you very much for joining us. And just to avoid any confusion, that website address is www.standingupfor.org.uk. In just a few weeks, the Brighton Theatre Group Youth Wing production of Chicago will be on at the Old Market. For the Nitty Gritty, let's talk to producer Keith Shepherd, director Michael Burney, and firstly, choreographer Jodie Michelle, who has the job of turning a diverse group of what are, after all, children into the slick company that everyone who's seen the show or the film remembers. So, Jodie, where do you start?
You just start from the beginning, you know, just get them all... We audition them so that we kind of know what they're capable of, and then we just go through the process, start at the beginning, and we have a lot of rehearsals. I'll teach them the steps, and then we'll go through them, and then we'll add to them, and then in the end we just get a great result, and they work really hard, so...
And do you push them? Do you try to get them to do more than they think they can?
Yeah, I definitely challenge them. But I think it's always good to challenge them and always do things that they possibly don't think they can do. And then at the end they do. And that's really rewarding for them and for us. So, yes.
And how important is this sort of training if you're going to go into the profession?
Oh, I think it's very important. I think a lot of youngsters just go to classes, which they do get their training from, but I always think it's very, very important to do theatre, belong to a group and learn to be on stage and learn the process of performing, and because I think it's really important to learn that side of things, not just to go to lessons and learn the actual technique itself. So I do think it's important.
And in this particular programme, we've also heard from Rebecca Lewins, who's in Ghost,
yes,
at the Theatre Royal. And I asked her the question, what about young people? And she said, train, train, train.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with her 100%. It's all about training. It's all about learning. And it's about learning not just the discipline, but just learning about theatre and what they have to go through and the experiences and where it becomes hard and where it's easy and where it's they give some confidence. So it's all of that as well, which I think they take with them and they can learn a lot.
Brilliant. Jodie, thanks very much. And Michael Burney, the director, we've spoken before, Michael. And so Chicago, I mean, it's known a bit for being quite raunchy.
It is. It's actually, it depends how you style the production and how you stage the production. And when you really look at it as a piece, it's not raunchy at all. It's about some women in a women's prison who have been convicted of murder. It just happens that productions, the West End and Broadway, styled it in such a way that people think it's raunchy, but it's not. So the version that we are doing, which we've kept completely to the script, is a youth version, edition. So they've been very, very clever on what they've allowed in the production, so it's definitely not raunchy.
But how do you make it yours? How do you do that special trust that everybody knows is Michael Burney's?
Yeah, well, when we... found out that we'd got permission to do Chicago, there were certain rules that you were allowed to do and not allowed to do, and one rule is to not do anything what looked like the West End production, which we wouldn't have done anyway. So we started with the design, the set design, and we met and we had 5 or 6 different versions of set designs, and once we decided on the set design, then the style of the show kind of was built around the set design from that initial meeting, and then from there you then come up with other ideas in the set. So we've got these movable staircases that we use quite a lot, which would be really interesting. We've never done that before. The idea of publicity and these ladies who've killed people wanting to be famous, and Chicago is all about desperately wanting to be famous. So we are using quite a lot of newspapers as well, around the set of 1920 Chicago newspapers, with a set of a prison and these movable stairs. And also in the design, we looked at the colours that we've decided to keep it very black and gold and maybe a little bit of purple. So the design came first, and then from our meetings, the overall look of the production followed.
And what about the music? Because that's very well known.
The music's beautiful music, and I'm a huge fan of Kandra Nebb, going back to Cabaret, which I knew of Cabaret, the film, before I knew of Chicago. And then I, many, many years ago, back in 87, 88, I was in a production of Chicago, an adult production, and that was my first kind of listening to the music. And there is a certain style of music that I can hear bits of Cabaret and bits of other Kandra Nebb music, which you kind of get as well with, say, Lloyd Webber and Sondheim. You can hear other musicals coming in there. But it's so perfect, and I think what they've been really good is this story, the music really fits the story. You don't feel that it's kind of like alien to the story, so it just moves the story on.
But if people come to see this high school edition of the show, will they still recognise it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the script is, I would say, probably about 96%, probably even a bit more, of the original script. Just odd lyrics have been taken out, a couple of songs have been removed, and a tiny bit of the dialogue's been rewritten. And French spent a long time on making sure that before they released it to youth groups and to schools, that it was absolutely appropriate for a school to do. So the story's definitely still there, and it's not been taken away from what they've done with it. And I think if you didn't know, and you'd never seen Chicago, you would love it. If you knew the show really well, I don't think you would miss certain things. I think it'd only be later you'd think, oh yeah, that song was not in, or they changed that lyric. And it's interesting because I know the original so well, some of the lyric changes, which have been very clever, in my mind I'm singing the original lyric, but the cast are doing the new lyric. So that's a bit odd for me, knowing it really, really well.
And would that apply to the audience?
If they know it really well, when it happens, they might think, oh, that's changed, but there's not many. I would say about 5 or 6 lyrics have been changed. So if they know it really well, they might think, oh, that was clever.
And the show itself, the Old Market in Hove, something of a home for the theatre group now.
It is. We have been there for a number of years, and our last being High School Musical last year. So this is perfect, and I think it will look beautiful. I think the company who are making the set that I'm going to see on Tuesday, when the set's up and the lighting and just the look and the styling of it that Jodie has styled, I think will just look beautiful. And it's so different than what we've done, so different to High School Musical and to Fame, which I'm really excited about. And I feel the cast are kind of excited about doing something really, really different.
I was going to say, how are the kids taking to it?
They're great. They're really embracing it. They knew High School Musical inside out. I would say when we started this, not many of them knew it at all. So we had to explain the story, teach the music for the first time, where High School Musical songs, they were kind of singing before we even kind of started. But we've been rehearsing for a number of months now, and they're really enjoying it. I really do feel, and you can always tell, just with when they arrive at rehearsals, their energy within a rehearsal. And I've really felt there was a really positive energy throughout, you know, the 50 we've got in the cast. So I think they are enjoying it.
Jodie, Michael talked about style. How do you create a style for something that's so well known?
Well, Chicago is one of my favourite shows anyway, so I got really excited about doing Chicago and choreographing it anyway, and so I already had some ideas before when we first had the meeting about doing Chicago. My sister and I are styling. She's the stylist in this, and I'm helping her out. But we had the idea when we got the show that we wanted to go down this route and to create the look that we've created.
Without being too raunchy for kids.
Definitely not raunchy. No, it's not raunchy at all. It's a very subtle, done very well, but you still get your tights and you still get your blacks, but in a very subtle and elegant way.
And the man that's behind it all, again, Keith Shepherd, producer, chairman, general dog's body. How do you get involved? I mean, where does the process start?
Kind of looking for availability of shows. There's so many shows out there that are on in London or on Broadway, but there's only a select amount of shows that are available to perform. And Chicago, we lasted in 1994, and certainly Mike and I were in that production, so 25 years ago, and we've kind of waited 25 years to do it again. And it was re-released for a youth production, so adults can't do it, but youth companies can, and we're one of the first within the UK to be able to do that. So it was an enormous excitement when we found out the show was available and we were given the rights for it. So a really good start for this new year of ours.
And a feather in the cap?
Totally. You know, we've been very lucky. We've been selected for lots of shows in the past based upon reputation and what we've done within this city of ours. So Chicago was a gift. And I think as Jodie and Michael have said, it's such a great show, full of phenomenal music, a great script, and just so many opportunities for young people to express themselves through drama and music and dance.
How do you find that shows go down with the public?
There's no such thing as a gold-plated show anymore. There used to be. You could always guarantee a show would sell. So you've got to look at what you think the market will be interested in. I think Chicago is of its time. I think it's exciting because it's not been done in Brighton for years, and it's only been done in town, in London, in the West End. So it's time to bring the show back. We generally get very good audiences at the old market. You know, we're a resident there, and we have a following, so that's always really quite useful for us to have as a backup. Plus new audiences come to see the show and would enjoy it and hopefully will return.
And Michael and Jodie were talking about the number of kids in the cast. How do you organise that number of children?
With a lot of planning, 50 kids in the show of all ages, you know, up to 17 years old and down to 10. So it's a big age variation of kids. They're all pretty well trained. They're pretty responsible children. We have an army of chaperones that manage them as they come into rehearsal. And we're particularly tight on governance and how we manage our rehearsal process. So each child is used when they're in rehearsal and not just sitting around on their phone or their iPad. So it's a really interactive hobby for them.
And are these kids that have been in other shows before, or is it a first?
It's a mixture. We've got some seasoned performers from the theatre group that have been kids, small children, and that have grown up into older children. There's a couple of ladies in this show that were in Les Mis, when we did Les Mis, and they played young Cosette, and they're now playing the leads in this production. So it's kind of been a growth for those two ladies, who are extraordinarily talented. And it's brought in a lot of new talent and a lot of new youth to the company, which is great for us, and it's our lifeblood.
What is it about musical theatre that is so exciting and so motivates people like you, Michael and Jodie?
I think it's about suspending reality. It's about doing things that is so different from your normal life. It's make-believe. It's fascinating. It's exciting. And it kind of takes you away from the strains of life, and you can express and watch people express themselves through music and dance. And for young people, it's seeing the joy on their faces when they're able to sing, to dance with like-minded people. So they leave school, where they may be the football team, and they come to rehearsal, where they're with like-minded people, have a great time. And this is a very tight band of children, or young people, I should say, that are really fighting the same corner to deliver production excellence.
I mentioned earlier Rebecca Lewins, who's appearing in Ghost at the Theatre Royal, and she started in an amateur theatre group and has not found it easy. I mean, she played Mary Magdalene in Jesus Christ Superstar and appeared in Joseph. How many do you think of your group will go on to star in the West End?
I think a good proportion have got the opportunity. We've certainly had a lot of success in the past where people have left our company and gone through training, some additional training, and are in London now, playing in great shows like Heathers and Les Miserables, and have the joy of being professionals. And whenever I speak with those people, they always say to me, we learnt our trade with the theatre group. And I think that's really important that they've done that. And they're an inspiration to our young people that also want to go into theatre. It's very much a celebrity culture. I want to be famous in this day and age. But theatre is it's a confidence boost for children as well to actually learn another aspect of life and to play a different character in their lives. So it's escapism as well as reality in to some extent.
And what will the audience for Chicago see when they come to the Old Market?
They'll see an extraordinary show which has got everything. It's got song, it's got dance, it's got drama. So the three key ingredients for musical theatre production. You can't go wrong with Fosse-style choreography that Jodie replicates. You can't go wrong with the drama that Michael has directed into these young people. And the music, of course, is just stunning. And Joe, our MD, has brought the best out of this score. And it's just fantastic. And as they say, it will clearly razzle-dazzle any audience that comes to see it.
That was Keith Shepherd from Brighton Theatre Group Youth, who will be putting on Chicago at the Old Market later in the month. More details shortly. And that's nearly it for this edition of At Home This Morning. So until we meet next over the airwaves in about 4 weeks' time, and before our final piece of music, there's just time for me to repeat those all-important contact details. For more information on the Standing Up for Sitting Down campaign, you can either go to www.anchor.org.uk or www.standingupfor.org.uk. For tickets to see Ghost at the Theatre Royal, just go to www.atgtickets, or better still, just go along to the box office in New Road and avoid that dreaded booking fee. If you'd like tickets to go and see BTG Youth and their production of Chicago, it's, as I said, on at the Old Market in Hove from Tuesday the 5th till Saturday the 9th of March. The number to call for tickets is 01273 201801, or you can also book online at www.theoldmarket.com, or you can simply pop along to the box office on weekdays between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. and actually book direct. But now there's just time for me, Chris English, to thank you for listening to this edition of At Home This Morning, and to again thank my executive producer, Richard Davis, and our colleague, Sarah Elgrew, for all the technical operation matters. I'll be back with you in about 4 weeks' time, but never fear, the programme will be here again in 2 weeks' time with a new edition, this time presented by executive producer Richard Davis. Remember, in this awful weather, make sure that you keep safe and warm. Bye for now.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production.